Just leave it, it's on already. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not.
No, on.
Miss Lee, you have your answer, sir.
Oh, okay. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then we shall mindfully commence the puja. Namo Bhansu Sijya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansu Sijya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansu Sijya Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa.อารหังสัมมาสัมพุทธบากาวะบุตังบากาวันตังอภิวาเทมิสุคาโตบากาวัตตาดัมโมดัมมังนามัสสามิสุปฏิปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆสังฆังนามามินะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะNamo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami.Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchamiทัติยัมปิพุทธังสรณังกัจฉามิทัติยัมปิธัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิทัติยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิปาณาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสัมมาทิยามิอาดินาดานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสัมมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสัมมาทิยามิมุสาวาดาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสัมมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจปมาดัทานะเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสัมมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุ Let us pay respect triple jhana Buddhang pajemiDhammang pujemi, Sanghang pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Never mind, it's okay. Don't worry. Okay, just relax yourself. Body and mind maintain some form ofAttentiveness, relax, silent, and just aware. Maintain some form of attentiveness. Then we will start our dhamma sharing. we are actually going through this Expatria Black Palm Sutta. We are on page 181. But before we start, we turn to page 1, where we will recite the opening verse. Thus for opening a sutta. Together we shall recite. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then we turn the page 181. So just to recollect, we will read the commentary on page 180 again. You cannot say I make offering to the Triple Gem. I have merits. So this is something that we need to develop understanding. So the thought that do all those things, this type of merits are still mundane merits. These are not true merits. That's why in the commentary by Shen Hua, he said, it is not merits, but these are just mundane blessings. Merits to the mundane people means you have some goodness, some blessings. But to a cultivator, to an enlightened being, you don't have real merits. Therefore, blessings and merits and virtue are different, so they separate using words. If you perform acts of blessing, you will receive the karmic retribution of blessing in future lives. But you obtain the advantages of merits and virtue now, in this life. So this is Chen Hua's way of explaining. Bodhidharma wanted to take the emperor across, as he wanted to transmit the teaching, let him understand the true Buddha Dharma, so that he will not be trapped at the mundane level of good doing good. But the emperor's ego was too big. Therefore, in order to break the emperor's attachment or ego, Bodhidharma said that he had no merits and virtue. The emperor was very unhappy, and from then on, he ignored Bodhidharma. No matter what Dhamma Bodhidharma spoke, he wouldn't listen. Why should I listen to you, according to the emperor? He would not respond to Bodhidharma's compassionate effort to save him. And so Bodhidharma just went away. Then after a while, the emperor died, according to Shen Hua, is of salvation. Actually, it's literally, not the actual meaning. As an emperor, he is very, very well off. Think it over. How could one with merits and virtue starve to death? He died of starvation because he has no merits and virtue. So in the spiritual sense, because he don't have any virtue or merit. That's why in the literal sense, Bodhidharma say he died of starvation. Means you don't have food, that's why you die. In the physical body sense, the lack of food caused death because of starvation. But in the spiritual sense, the lack of true merits and virtue is also like starvation. Means you don't have any proper wholesomeness to back you up in your cultivation. So he died of starvation because he has no merits and virtue. Bodhidharma had wanted to wake him up so that he would not have to die that way. What a pity that the emperor's view of himself was so big, means the ego, that Bodhidharma couldn't help him. So that was where we had our discussion. Then we stopped there. Now we continue. The magistrate asked further, your disciple has seen the Sangha and ladies reciting Amitabha Buddha, vowing to be reborn in the West. So this is a very common recitation by the Pure Land cultivator. Then this magistrate want to know, will the High Master please tell me if they were to obtain rebirth there and so dispel my doubt? So to him, he wants an answer as to whether by reciting the chanting and vow to be reborn in the Western Paradise, Si Fang Si Jie, Jue Ding Wang Sen. So they have this type of vow. They determine strongly through their own faith, through their own what they call vows. Then we go to the commentary. Commentary by Xuan Hua. The magistrate said the clergy means the monks and lay people recite the name of Amitabha, the Buddha of limitless light. They all vow to be reborn in the land of ultimate bliss. So you look at notes 39, under land of ultimate bliss. For further reference, see, there is a text that Xuan Hua also wrote. A general explanation of the Buddha speaks the Amitabha Sutta by Tipitaka Master Hua. So this one, you have to refer to that book. Then we continue. High Master, were they actually be born there? So that was the question by the magistrate. The magistrate himself understood the principle, but he knew that others present in the assembly did not understand. And so he asked the six patriarchs for an explanation. At that time, the recital of the Buddha's name slandered the Zen school. So note 40, you read. The five Buddhist Zen school, each take a different approach to cultivation. The five are, they call it the Zen school, one of them. Then the secret school. Then there is this Vinaya school and the teaching school. Then lastly is the Pure Land. The Pure Land sect is associated with recitation of the name of Amitabha Buddha in order to obtain rebirth in the Western Paradise, the Pure Land of Amitabha, according to the teaching of Amitabha. So this one is they call Jingtu, Pure Land, Jingtu. So if you are a follower of Pure Land, they will teach you to develop this what they call faith in Amitabha Buddha. So through that faith, if you recite sincerely, it will connect to Amitabha's 48 vow. Then, because this Pure Land, under the 48 vow of Amitabha, he determined to create this Pure Land. So that's why if you have affinity, it can happen. So this one is not a theory or a myth. But other religion, they don't understand, or even among the other Buddhist sect or tradition who don't have the understanding of Pure Land cultivation, they will comment. So likewise, within Buddhism, especially Theravada Buddhism, they don't like Mahayana. So they will have certain type of comments. Basically, it's because the lack of understanding. So they will tend to follow the conservative tradition of the Theravada. Where Theravada tradition is called the orthodox tradition. Orthodox means they are very, very orthodox in their approach to Dhamma. So whatever that is not in the Theravada Tipitaka, or they are not sure whether it's the direct teaching of the Buddha or not, they will just take it off, that's it. They call it the orthodox tradition. They stick to whatever they know. Their intention is also quite good, so that the true Dhamma will not be contaminated. So their intention is whatever they preserve is the authentic teaching. Whatever not sure, they just chop it off. That's it. So you have this, they call it the orthodox teaching. Or the Mahayana call it the small vehicle, where you limit yourself, you cannot grow, you cannot expand. So they call the other teaching Mahayana, the great vehicle. So because of that, Theravada tradition, they don't like the word Hinayana, small vehicle. Actually, Hinayana is the earlier word for Theravada. So later on, they call it the elders. Thera means monks that are more than 20 years in monkhood. So they call it the Theravada, the tradition of the elders. That's how Theravada come into being. So they feel better with that name. But Mahayana also can understand their reason. So those who have the understanding, they will be okay with whatever name you take. So this comes about because of difference of understanding. So when the Pure Land come into being, there's a lot of doubt in the cultivator. Even in the Zen, they emphasize on cultivation, practice and other things. But then when it comes to Pure Land, they come up with this chanting of Amitabha's name, Pho Hao, Amitabha. Then they also develop this, what they call aspiration to take birth in the land of ultimate bliss, the Western Paradise or Pure Land that Amitabha Buddha has perfected or formulated. Then this led the Theravada tradition and other Zen tradition to have this idea. He said, by chanting alone, you don't meditate, how can you become enlightened? This is definitely not the Buddha's teaching. But then later on, as they cultivate, even those who are in the Theravada tradition who seriously cultivate, and the other sect of Mahayana cultivation, the Zen school, the secret school, the Vinaya school, or the Sutta teaching school, finally, they still go back to Pure Land, Tsingtu. In fact, a lot of Mahayana elders, they also finally understood Pure Land. The reason being, like I explained earlier on during the Heart Sutta sharing, Pure Land teaching is not about chanting alone. Because of their great understanding, Amitabha Buddha has tried to develop this teaching through his own understanding so that this teaching can be approached from a very much easier way. It will take longer, but it is a lot easier. Instead of trying to master the teaching, which is not easy for most people, if you don't have the sharp mind, if you don't have the karmic inheritance, it's very difficult to go direct into the teaching. And there are so many things related to cultivation that are very difficult to comprehend. So what Amitabha did is, he tried to develop the faith in them. So the faith in them, when you recite the Buddha's name, Amitabha, 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 this will develop the faith in the cultivator who recites, and that faith will bring forth the spiritual faculty, sadhā, very strong. Then that faith, when you understand how Amitabha Buddha has taken so long to develop the perfection, and how wonderful his teaching was, especially the pure land that he has created. So from there, the virya will arise, spiritual zeal. That's why sadhā virya, the first two spiritual faculty will arise. Then when you chant with faith, sadhā and virya, your chanting become very different. You become very mindful of the chanting. Means the four hao or the Amitabha Buddha's name and the mind become one when you chant. That is the tea. When the mind and the chanting become one, there is no one to chant. Then that two become one. That's why when awareness and the vibration become one, there is just a tea. There is no one inside there chanting. So sadhā virya leading to the perfection of the tea or mindfulness. Then when the chanting becomes so perfect, full of awareness, if you were to develop this training until it become a part of you, then this sati will stabilize and become samadhi. Means throughout the day you develop this spiritual faculty. And through this, whatever thing they do in the midst of life, whether it's the chanting or whatever, the religious routine that they have, like you go to Cameron Highland, they have their chanting early morning, then afternoon recitation, then there is also the evening or later part of the day, the recitation. And they do it with mindfulness. Then they walk, they walk and chant, Amitabha, Amitabha, Amitabha. Then sometimes they change to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva too. Then sometimes different type of manifestation of chanting. But when they start, they also chant the sutta, the various type of sutta, even Wu Pi Jing Se, you all do it as a monthly routine. Certain day of the month you have different chanting. Then these are the tradition passed down, and you must know what it is. That's why when you chant with understanding, like when we say you meditate with understanding, then you benefit. Otherwise you don't benefit. You keep on chanting because you think this is mandatory, you must chant. No. You chant because it brings about a good religious routine for you to develop your spiritual faculty. Then when your spiritual faculty is there, in the midst of your daily life, because this chanting has become a part of you, the five mental hindrances will automatically cease. Then when the five mental hindrances is no more, you realize throughout the day you are in the state of awareness, mindfulness, heedfulness. Then you start to see your mental intention behind everything you do very clearly. Then all of a sudden, because you chant the sutta, and sometimes when you read through the teaching, you will start to understand them on your own because of your spiritual faculty. Then all of a sudden it becomes clear to you the deep meaning, underlying meaning. Even the Diamond Sutta, when you start to reflect and contemplate on the very, very deep meaning of the sutta, they only give you the final summary, the very commonly taught type of stanza, the fourth stanza that the Diamond Sutta always quote is, Yi qie yu wei fa, zu meng huan pao ying, zu lu yi ru tian, 应作如是观。 So the translation is everything is dependent originating. These are called the conditioned Dhamma. Within the conditioned world, this conditioned Dhamma keep on arising and passing away. So because they are conditioned Dhamma, they are not real, is it? They are like illusion, like dreams, like bubble and shadow. There is no reality in all the phenomenal world. They are like a lightning flash, or a dew, morning dew. When the sunrise is gone, it shows to you clearly the impermanent characteristics of all phenomena. Flash of a lightning is very fast. Split second is gone, dead and gone. That's why the present moment is the only reality, but split second is dead and gone. Your thought process too, moment to moment, arise and pass away. Split second, dead and gone. Then even whatever phenomena that you observe through your seeing, your hearing, your smell, your taste, your tactile consciousness or your thought process, they are like morning dew. The moment the sun rises, the dew will just disappear. So you should contemplate it this way so that you will not be deceived or deluded by the phenomenal world. So that you will understand even your own form and mind is part of that conditioned Dhamma reality. It is also impermanent, dependent, originating. That's why it's empty, non-self, not you. Then when you reflect and contemplate deep into it, then all of a sudden you will awaken. If the whole of phenomenal world is just like that, then why do I cling? Why do I grasp? Why do I give meaning and get the mind entangled? Then you start to understand why the Buddha say all of Dhamma or all of Sankhara is impermanent. Sabbe Sankhara Anicchang. That all of Sankhara, because it's impermanent, it leads to suffering. Because you cannot expect it to be a permanent, unchanging entity. Like this body, you cannot expect it to forever young. Don't get sick, don't get old, don't die. No such thing. All of phenomenal world is the same. All of conditioned Dhamma is the same. So when you try to like through a mind that has this delusion, that crave and cling to own things, possess things, and want certain good phenomena to continue to exist, you will have problem. You will suffer. Because the truth is, they go the way of nature. They exhibit these three universal characteristics of impermanence leading to suffering. If you cannot understand this and accept the reality, you will be in conflict with the conditioned world and you will have suffering. Because wanting things your way, and when you cannot get what you want, suffering will arise. This is the cause of suffering. Not able to get what one desires. Through delusion. So this is the aspect of the teaching where many people cannot understand. Okay? So this is the introduction so that you can understand the profoundness of Pure Land teaching. Then we continue. The magistrate himself understand the principle, but he knew that others present in the assembly did not understand. And so he asked the six patriarchs for an explanation. So at that time, the recital of the Buddha's name slandered the Zen school. So the Zen school, under note 40, is already explained the five types of Zen school. So we continue from there. Next page. Zen school people eat their fill, sit down, shut their eye, and go to sleep. What kind of work is that? Lazy work. So this is Pure Land people commenting, the Zen school. They don't compare with those who recite the Buddha's name. So to them, recitation is the best Dhammadol. And then the Zen school fire back. You recite the name of Amitabha to gain rebirth in the Western paradise. In the past, before Amitabha Buddha, what Buddha's name did you recite? So this is argument. And so they fought, saying, you are wrong, you are wrong. Until finally, nobody knew who was right. So it became so bad at that time. Then the sutta continued. Then the master answered. The master said, magistrate, listen well. Hui Ning, who is a sixth patriarch, will explain it for you. When the world-honored one was in Shravati city, means Sakyamuni Buddha, he spoke of being led to rebirth in the Western paradigm, means he spoke the Amitabha Sutta. The Sutta text clearly states it is not far from here. If we discuss its appearance, it is 108,000 miles away. But in immediate term, it is just beyond the 10 evils and the 8 deviations within us. It is explained as far distant for those of inferior roots and as nearby for those with superior wisdom. Yeah. Then we go to the commentaries. Shravati is a city in India. Translated, it means abundance and virtue. In Shravati, the 5 desires were abundant. These are the 5 desires. First is fame, wealth, sex, food and sleep. So this will cause your downfall if you have this 5 desire. Or they call it craving. Craving for fame, craving for wealth, craving for sex, craving for food and sleep. The people of Shravati had the virtue of much learning and liberation. They had studied a great deal and were not attached. In this city of abundance and virtue, the Buddha spoke of being led to rebirth in the land of ultimate bliss, the land of ultimate bliss appear to be 108,000 miles away. But if you discuss it in immediate terms, it is just beyond the 10 evils and the 8 deviations within earth. Actually, the Amitabha Sutta says that the Western paradise is 10 billion lands away. But the great master said 108,000 miles because he wants to counter the prejudice of those in the assembly. In terms of its appearance, the Western paradise is far away. But in terms of our own nature, it is just beyond the 10 evils and the 8 deviations. So this is spiritual explanation. When you have that spiritual understanding, you will know how to break free. Because Pure Land means what? When your mind state can develop the purity, when it's free of all the 10 evils, which is actually basically the manifestation of the 3 evil roots. So in the commentary, Xuanhua has defined the 10 evils. They are committed by the body. The first 3 actually is from the precepts, but they expanded on it. So the first 3, your bodily action that leads to negativity. These are the first 3. What are they? The 3 evil actions of killing, stealing and sexual misconduct. These are performed by the body. Then there are also 3 committed by the mind. So these are your 3 evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Your mental intention that has this greediness or selfishness or craving and mental intention. Then the anger, the hatred, the envy, the jealousy. Then delusion means wrong view or leading to fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. Then number 7, 7, 8 and 9, these are the foul languages, talking about the affair of man and woman, like backbiting and other things. Then lying, then you got harsh speech. The 10 is slandering. So these are the 4 type of wrong speeches. So that's why you have body, mind and speech. So the 4 type of wrong speeches, you have to be mindful. So lying is in the precept. Then the other one is harsh speech. When you have harsh speech, it's also a wrong speech. When you speak with anger, with hatred, with jealousy, with violence and all those things. Then when you slander, it's also a very severe karmic consequence. Like you slander the Triple Gem, or you say bad things about people behind their back, backbiting and all those things. Then the last one is frivolous speech, talk about affair of people or not important issue that can lead to misunderstanding and other things. So these are the 10 evil. So the 10 evil are just an expansion of the 5 precepts. The 8 deviations, are the opposite of the Noble Eightfold Path that Sakyamuni taught. Means, instead of right view, you have wrong view. Instead of right thought, you have wrong thought. Instead of right speech, you have wrong speech. Instead of right action, you have wrong action. And instead of right living, you have wrong living. Then, instead of cultivating the 4 right effort, you do the opposite. You apply wrong effort. Then 7 mindfulness, he called it the right recollection. Actually, it's not recollection. It's mindfulness, or they call it 正念. It's awareness. To be mindful is to be aware, attentive, silent. Because when you are aware, you are fully aware of the whole process. That's how you can recollect. When you are mindful of your hand movement, like where you place your purse, your car key, or how you move. When you have that awareness or mindfulness, you can recall. That's why there is this quality of recollection. When you are not thinking, not lost in thought, you are not heedless. That's why you can recall clearly what happened. You want to go back and check. That's why I will know sometimes where I left my thing. Then I will tell my wife or whoever, it's okay, it's there. Because when I was putting it down, I went through that process of awareness. You are aware. That's how you can recollect. And you will know where that thing is. Then if you are observant and aware, certain things that happen, you can recollect. You can recall. Because at that moment of awareness, the mind is fully aware of what is happening. That's how you can recall. Just now he was there. Because you, through your awareness, you saw him. So that is why they use the word recollection. But the more accurate one is awareness before the knowing. Then the 8th one is not right concentration, it is right samadhi, collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, born of wisdom. The eighth division, the eighth deviation then would consist of deviant views, different thought, deviant speeches, and deviant action, deviant living or livelihood, and deviant effort, or deviant recollection or awareness, and deviant samadhi. The Buddha spoke of the Western paradise as distant to those of common intelligence, means those who don't have the Dhamma, who still have the evil, the mundane mind that is with wrong view, wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and all those things. To those of superior intelligence, he spoke of the Western paradise as being on the other side of the 10 evil and 8 deviation within their own self nature. That's why for those who understand, they will know even Quang Ching Lao He Sang, the famous illiterate monk too. He only speak Hokkien, I remember. Then somebody translated his sharing, Kai Si Lu, how he became enlightened and how he developed the understanding of the Dhamma. So inside there was a section where people asked him, where is the land of ultimate bliss, Western paradise? You know what his answer is? What was his answer? His answer is different from Hui Ning. Hui Ning say, when your mind has developed the ability to root out the 10 evil action and the 8 what they call deviation, then you will realize the land of ultimate bliss, Western paradise. So what Hui Ning wants you to understand is this land of ultimate bliss is not a place where you can find. It's not somewhere. It's a transformation when your mundane mind that has the delusion, root out that delusion, then it will realize the pure nature, and that is the land of ultimate paradise, or what they call the Western paradise, land of ultimate bliss. So Quang Ching Lao He Sang answer it in a different way. He said, Si Fang Zai Xing Tou, is within your true mind, within your heart. He said, when you chant until there is no more what they call delusion, then that pure mind is where the Western paradise is. So your spiritual faculty, you must develop it through that chanting, the Pure Land chanting. Then when you chant until no one is chanting, is it? Then when that stabilizes, you will realize that land of ultimate bliss or Western paradise. You will realize that cessation, and you will understand what Pure Land is. Means pure in the sense that there is no more delusion, no more evil roots. That's why no more 10 evil. The 10 evil action does not manifest. The 8 deviation also does not arise. So means you have the Noble Eightfold Path cultivated. That's why that form of mind that has this can realize the Pure Land, can realize that what they call enlightenment, true mind, true nature. So this is the teaching. If you understand, then you don't go and search. That's why Nirvana is not a place. Pure Land is not a place. But because of the vow, it is a rhyme that is within the mind, but it's not within the 31 plane of existence. So Amitabha's vow that manifests that pure land, you cannot understand until you connect to the vow and have this affinity. Then those who have this understanding, they will know it exists, you know, in the mind of living beings. You know. But you must have that type of affinity. You know. Then when you are there, it is very easy to develop the cultivation because of Amitabha's support. The vow that support, it has become nature's law. So if you have faith in Amitabha, you recite, then that faith through your aspiration and your vow connect, then it will support you all the way. Then you can develop the realization very easily. That's why they say the pure land way is the fastest, if you understand. Yeah, the qualifying word is if you understand. Easiest and faster, because no need to understand anything, just chant with faith. That's why Amitabha developed it through faith. It takes him 12 aeons or asankhaya kappas, whereas Sakyamuni, who did it through wisdom way, only take 1/3 the period, about slightly less than 4 aeons or asankhaya kappas, 3¾ plus a bit. Then the one that go through virya to become samasambuddha, that one take about 8 aeons or asankhaya kappas. So according to the scripture, all these three way, their period of cultivation is different. So that's why for those who go by faith, it's easier but take much longer. But very, very much easier because no complication. But those who go by wisdom way, like Sakyamuni, you must have that special parami, the wisdom parami. And you cannot afford to make any mistake, deviation. Because the moment you make mistake and deviate, you can get lost very long. But if you have that affinity, have that fast cultivation, and you can go that way, then it can be very fast. The one that is in between is using virya, spiritual zeal, determination to walk this way. You keep on determined, means in between. You neither have very strong faith or the wisdom way, but you are very sincere, you are very determined. You have a lot of virya to drive you along. So you keep on cultivating. And then within 8 asankhaya kappas, they can become samasambuddha. So these are the one that is recorded in the scripture. Okay, the next paragraph is page 183, at the bottom. There are two kinds of people, not two kinds of Dhamma. Enlightenment and confused differ, and seeing can be quick or slow. The deluded person recites the Buddha name, seeking rebirth there, while the enlightened person purifies their mind. Therefore the Buddha said, as the mind is purified, the Buddha land is purified. So this is a very important stanza. So we look at the commentary by Xuan Hua. The two kinds of people are not white or yellow, but wise and deluded ones. There is only one Dhamma. Deluded or wise, you cultivate the same Dhamma. Means Dhamma is just Dhamma, truth. But human nature can be a lot. But basically it's very simple. You can separate them into just two categories, enlightened and unenlightened, deluded and wise. So during the Buddha's time, he also used these two, is it? You are either enlightened or unenlightened. Putujana refers to unenlightened being. Arya refers to enlightened being. Then confused people recite the Buddha's name and expect to be reborn in the Western paradise, while the wise recite the Buddha's name in order to purify their own mind. So now you understand, huh? You can understand what I was trying to explain to you, isn't it? So deluded people, you know what they think, because they believe in Amitabha Buddha's teaching, Pure Land. So they say, if I were to continue to recite the Buddha's name, means they chant the Buddha's name. So this is the first category, deluded. In their thought, they believe, that's why it's not wisdom, they believe. If I chant and chant and chant, what happened? I will get reborn in the land of Pure Land, which is land of ultimate bliss. So what they do? They just chant without understanding. Chant without understanding. Understanding. So they just chant and hope to what? Hope to be reborn in the hope to be reborn where? Pure Land. And how can it happen? Cannot. That's why the wise one, the wise ones, they understand it differently. Chanting is pure, means Pure Land chanting. Pure Land chanting is to what? Just now we just read through. Purify the mind means to develop the five spiritual faculty. Purify. The mind. That is, cultivate the five spiritual faculty. That's why when you understand this, this is true cultivation of Pure Land. That's why don't be deluded, don't be deceived. Then you end up like people say, argue. You think chant, 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 you can become enlightened. So deluded one, they will be like those who chant without understanding. As they chant, they can get angry. You remember the story of that lady, the old lady? I think she was chanting Pure Land Amitabha. It was a true Zen story in China. There was an old cultivator who is already enlightened. So this cultivator has a lot of wisdom and understanding. So what happened was, he knew this old lady was chanting without understanding. So he wants to create condition for this old lady, she's already so old, to develop the understanding of the Pure Land cultivation. So what happened is, every day when she starts her chanting, she will wait till she started chanting for a while. Then as she was in the midst of this chanting, because this old man who is really enlightened, he listened, he will know already. This one is the wrong way of chanting, chanting without understanding. That's why there is no faith. It's just repetitive, mumbling. So what happened was, he will go and knock the door. He will go and knock and knock and knock and knock. Then this old lady who was chanting, don't have patience. She said, who is this guy? Come at the wrong time to disturb me when I'm cultivating the Pure Land chanting. So he decided to stop, went to the door, opened the door, cannot find anybody. Then she went back and chant again. Then after he chant, again the knock came. Wow, this time she very, very unhappy already. She went to the door. She met this old man. Then he, out of anger, scolded the old man. He said, didn't you hear me chanting, cultivating the Pure Land teaching, reciting Amitabha mercy? How can you come and disturb me at this time? So she became very unhappy, and tell the old man off. But the old man just smiled. Then after that, he warned the old man, don't disturb me again. So again, she went back and chant. And this time, after a while, again the door knocked. This old lady, he wants to really tell this old man already. So this time he came out full of anger and all those things, open the door, expecting the old man and all those things. Then really, the old man was there smiling. Then he really scolded this old man and threatened to abuse the old man, is it? And you know what the old man tell her or not? Do you know what you are doing or not? He said, do you know why I come and knock? He said, through your chanting, you are disturbing the neighborhood, and etc. That's why we come and warn you not to do that. Then this lady couldn't understand. She said, I have my right. I'm cultivated. I want to chant each other. Then the old man told him, for me it's okay, but what if you do that to Amitabha? Keep on disturbing him non-stop. Understand? So your karmic is very severe. He said, I come and knock a few times, you're already so angry. And you have been doing this to Amitabha for so long. You think Amitabha also got a lot of patience. Then only she realized, how can I be cultivating the Pure Land teaching and yet have so much anger and delusion? Then he realized the old man was right. If what I am doing doesn't lead me to purify my mind, that's why here the word is purify your mind. Means what? Less anger, less selfishness, less delusion. Ultimately root them out. Then you are on the wrong path. True or not? Means you don't understand the cultivation. Means you are wasting your time. You are not developing the spiritual faculty. You are mumbling, repetitively reciting without understanding. There is no spiritual faculty. Your anger, your emotion, your karmic negativity, they are all still there, not rooted out. Not even the slightest improvement. So this is the same way you check your cultivation. If you go to retreat, thinking that you have developed the meditation, like the old lady chanting, 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 thinking that he has developed the Pure Land cultivation, then you are not aware of your own anger, your own evil roots. Means after the retreat or formal meditation, the moment you are out into society or back to life, you realize you haven't changed. Your fear is still there. Your emotion is still there. Your anger, your hatred, your jealousy, your whatever selfishness, greediness, they are all still there. Your craving, your lust, your attachment, your clinging, your grasping, your possessiveness, they are all still there, not even rooted out. Then you know you are on the wrong path. You are not cultivating at all. You are not purifying your mind at all. So this is what the Buddha Dhamma is all about. That's why mindfulness to constantly check is very important. Any movement, any stirring of the mind, any wrong view within that condition you to react and become what you are. All this is what meditation is. That's why the real meditation is to develop the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance, especially your sati, mindfulness. When you are mindful, aware, then only you can start to take care of your evil roots, take care of the spiritual faculty that is to be developed. Then your five mental hindrance naturally will be rooted out. So this is what cultivation is all about. Without mindfulness, you cannot cope with life. You cannot see your own defilement. You cannot investigate the Dhamma. You cannot develop the right understanding to straighten your view. You cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So always have this understanding in mind. When you meditate, check. Meditate with understanding. What are you doing in the name of meditation? Are you just repeating what people tell you? Believing in what people tell you? Doing things without understanding? When you chant with understanding, means I'm here to develop the sadha virya leading to sati. So I chant with faith. Then I develop my virya, I contemplate, I reflect. Then I chant, I don't have a thought that wants to go to land of paradise, Western paradise. I will not have a thought that I want to be enlightened. Yeah, this is all within the field of thought. You just do, don't try to know when you meditate. Relax, silent, and just aware. Then through that awareness, that sati, it will understand. It will see things as they are very clearly. Then through this understanding, you will straighten your view so that you will not react and live life the same way as you used to do through your delusion, through your own ignorance. So all this will lead you back to the correct path. So mindfulness is the most important because it's the first factor of enlightenment. Without sati, you cannot cope with life, you cannot start. Without sati, you cannot investigate into the Dhamma. You cannot know or understand how all these things become what it is, how you are conditioned into delusion, how your mind stir and become evil, how it affects you karmically, and how you fall. It's only through mindfulness that you start to develop all this understanding. Then you tell yourself, how come I continue to do this? How can I develop the understanding to change? Means I have to straighten my view so that the next time I see the same thing, hear the same thing, smell, taste, feel and arise the thought or recall to memory, I will not react and stir like before. Last time I did it because I got wrong view, I don't understand. I got selfishness because I think I exist. Then because of the ego, I can become emotional, fearful. Then because I don't have right view, I dare to do things that violate nature's law. So it's just like the sharing that Sister Han sent out. You all read it there. On the taxi driver. That one is a very good sharing because the taxi driver, he has to learn the hard way. Last time when he started, I think the name that was given was Wasu. what so? Maybe I read this out, then you all can understand. He said, brilliant article. Just couldn't resist sharing it, from Sister Han. The title is The Duck Quack, Whereas the Eagle Saw. You know the eagle, very steady, saw above, then very sharp in mindfulness. Then what happened was, this story relates to a taxi driver who initially was without Dhamma, without understanding, a typical taxi driver, very rush, very aggressive, very selfish, just want to make a quick buck, ever willing to cheat people, deceive people, and take advantage of people, then never develop any goodness or kindness towards his own customer or passenger. So because of that selfishness, he went into very difficult situation. He got less business, he hardly survived, and he got a lot of problems. Then later on, one day, he learned from somebody who told him, if you want to have good life, good business, so that things will go your way, you need to change yourself. But it is you that decide what type of life you will have. Then initially he don't believe, but later on he give it a try. Then finally he got more confident because he sees by changing himself, he make the customer more happy. His sincerity touched them. His kindness touched them. His service towards them touched them. Then he got a motto, that he wrote on his card. So people were very impressed with him. So people liked him. People took down his number. People gave him business. Then he realized the first year his business almost doubled revenue and profit. Then going into the second year onward, he believed it will triple or quadruple. And he now becomes so different, so friendly, so beautiful. So I read to you this one. He said, I was waiting in line for a ride at the airport when a taxi pulled up. The first thing I noticed was that the taxi was polished to a brilliant shine, smartly dressed in a white shirt, black tie, and freshly pressed black slack. The taxi driver jumped out and rounded the car to open the back passenger door for me. He handed me a laminated card and said, I'm Wasu, your taxi driver. While I'm loading your bag in the truck, I would like you to read my mission statement. Oh, so he got a mission statement, he said. So taken aback, I read the mission statement. It said, Wasu's mission statement, to get my customer to their destination in the quickest, safest, and cheapest way possible, and yet in a very friendly environment. So you have this type of taxi driver, you will use it. Will you use it or not? You will definitely use it. Because where on earth can you find one who can take you to a destination quickest, safest, and cheapest, and yet friendly environment. So this blew me away, especially when I noticed that the inside of the cab matched the outside, spotlessly clean. It took the trouble to clean up the taxi for the customer. So as he slide behind the wheel, Wasu say, would you like a cup of coffee? I had a tomo of regular and one of decaffeine. I said jokingly, no, I prefer a soft drink. Wasu smiled and said, no problem. I had a cooler up front with regular and Diet Coke, lassi, water and orange juice. Almost stuttering, I said, I will take the last seat. Handing me my drink, Vasu say, if you like something to read, I have the papers, the Hindu, the time of India, ET and India today. I think this must be an Indian taxi driver. As they were pulling away, Vasu handed me another laminated card. These are the stations I get and the music they play. If you like to listen to the radio, you may. And as if that weren't enough, Vasu told me that he had the aircon on and asked me if the temperature is comfortable for me. Then he advised me of the best route to my destination for that time of the day. He also let me know that he will be happy to chat and tell me about some of the sites, or if I prefer to leave me with my own thoughts. See, such a friendly taxi driver. Then after that, he asked the taxi driver, he said, tell me, Vasu. I was amazed and asked him, have you always served your customer like this? He suspect. There was a smile in the rear mirror. No, not always. In fact, it's only in the last 2 years. My first 5 years of driving, I spent most of my time complaining like all the other taxi drivers. Then I heard about the power of choice one day. Power of choice is that you can either be like a duck or an eagle. What does duck do? What does duck do? Complain, quack, 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 and make a lot of noise. The eagle, quiet. Just mindful, aware, and know where his target is. He said, if you get up in the morning expecting to have a bad day, you will rarely disappoint yourself. Understand? Because you are so unhappy. Business no good, life no good, everything no good. So you expect another similar bad day. He said, you will never disappoint yourself. So what happened is, he said, stop complaining. Nobody owe you a living. Understand? Don't be like the duck. Keep on quacking. Be an eagle. He said, duck quacks and complains. Eagle soar above the cloud. That hits me right on the head, said Vasu. It was all about me. I was always quacking and complaining and blaming. So I decided to change my attitude and become an eagle. I looked around at other taxi drivers and cab drivers. Their taxi were dirty, the driver were unfriendly, and customer were unhappy. So I decided to make some changes. I put in a few at a time. When my customer responded well, I do more. I take it that has paid off for you, because the customer told him. He said, yeah, it sure has, Vasu replied. My first year as an eagle, I doubled my income from the previous year. This year, I will probably quadruple it. My customer called me for appointment on my phone. Seller phone. Or leave a message of thanks on it. Vasu make a different choice. He decided to stop complaining and quacking like the duck and start to soar like an eagle. So the conclusion here is, have an eagle week. Next week and next and next. So this one is a great thought, you see. You don't die if you fall in water. You will die only if you don't know how to swim. So if you are lazy, keep on complaining and refusing to change your attitude towards life because of your own selfishness, because of your own delusion, anger, emotion. You think the world owes you a living. You think other people is the cause of your problem. That's why your life becomes miserable. So Dhamma is not that. The Buddha already explained to us the three right view. The first one is law of karma. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. And you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So I replied to Han, I said, this particular message that you send is very good for most people who don't have the Dhamma because they were changed. So the conclusion she put there is that's the real meaning of life. The real meaning is not that one alone. That one is just a lesson learned. But this result come about through Buddha Dharma, through the Buddha's teaching. You can apply the same, your life will change. The Buddhist teaching, the Buddha Dharma will improve your life, will change you completely, tremendously. Because the Buddha said, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported. You are what you are because of your karma. So the taxi driver was what he is because of his karma. Why? He himself didn't do the right thing. Correct or not? Been lazy, been selfish, he never cleaned up his taxi. He never take the customer's life into consideration. He didn't drive safely. He's very rude, very unfriendly, money-minded, very selfish. You reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. If your attitude is like that, if your approach to life is like that, you will suffer. Because law of karma, it will come back and haunt you. And you will lose your customer. And from the way you go about doing things, you will never have the same customer coming back to you. Then you will be throughout the day complaining, getting angry, very unhappy, frustrating, falling deeper into delusion. You become more and more negative in your approach to life. And you are a very, very unhappy man. The moment you decide to change, if you understand that it is you who decide your life, if you decide to change over following this right view, to have all the goodness. That's why the advice of the Buddha comes from this. If the law of karma say you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned, supported by your karma, what must you do? Huh? What must you do? What must you do? If karma plays such a great role in your life, what must you do? Huh? You must? It's very obvious, isn't it? You must take care of? Take care of what? Huh? Karma. How do you take care of karma? Huh? Follow the advice of the Buddha, which is to avoid all evil. Do good and purify the mind. Why do you do that? If you don't avoid all evil, karma is you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. So you must have more and more goodness. That's why the Buddha's advice is to avoid all evil. When you are incapable of evil, this karmic future will not come back to you. Then when you have goodness, wholesomeness, if you are friendly, generous, kind, honest, sincere, you will have a lot of goodness, wholesomeness, virtue, merit, and all this goodness will come back to you. That's why you will have more customer, more friend, and your loved one will love you. Your friends, your colleague, all will love you because you are not the selfish type. Then you reap what you sow. They will repay your kindness. They will thank you for what you have done for them. Then they will love you. Because you are being very kind, very sincere, very honest, very truthful, very helpful. And you will get a lot of good recommendation from people. And you will have good life. That's why when you understand all this, then when you follow the advice of the Buddha, you realize your life changed. Similarly for other religions. How come people who believe in Christianity, they always tell you the same story, after I came to know Christianity, after I have this faith in Jesus, oh God, my life changed. But of course they attribute everything to God, understand? Actually it's following this nature's law that the Buddha has pointed out. When you become a Christian means what? You believe in the teaching of Christ, the embodiment of Jesus' love and compassion and His Ten Commandments. When you keep His Ten Commandments, it's like you keep the precepts. You avoid evil. Then you have Jesus' love and compassion. You are incapable of cheating people, hating people and other things. Then if you really follow the Christians, what they call teaching, the or embodiment of Jesus' teaching, which is love and compassion, goodness and kindness, which is common to all religions, means you already have taken the right step. Because through all this, you will develop wholesomeness, merit, you avoid evil, you do good. Your life will change for the better. You will become like more lucky. You will receive more goodness, wholesomeness. But they thought everything is because of God. So they thank God for their food, they thank God for everything. But when negative things happen, they never think why God is so unfriendly, why God is so cruel. Because they were told this is God's way of testing you. That's why you cannot complain. You have to endure the test. So if you look at the teaching, when you understand, it is about another understanding. Because they can never really understand what God is. Because to them, God is omniscient, almighty. That's why they don't even have an image. Understand? They only have Jesus, Son of God, and other things. But then, if you look at it and ask yourself that question, what happens if nature's law is the one responsible for everything that arises and become whatever it is? Means the reality of life and existence, they are all governed by nature's law, like scientific law, spiritual law. Then if the law of karma decides, then if that is God, then you have to understand that law. That's why if it is do good because good, do evil because evil, which is also in the Christian teaching, you reap what you sow and other things. Then you realize, as an individual living being who wants to have the good life, you have to accord and flow with this nature's law, which is law of karma. You cannot violate this law. You cannot develop the wrong action, wrong speech and wrong thought that bring about negativity of karma. And who are the one who do all this? People who violate the precepts, the commandment, they commit evil. They have the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. So like the taxi driver analogy, the Dhamma tells you the same thing. Your life. You hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be unhappy and miserable is entirely your choice. Choose wisely. If you choose to be happy, it's very easy. Like the Buddha said, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. One lead to suffering, one lead to happiness. So the Buddha already knew about the mind. That's why Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, he said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So we choose to take care of mind. If you were to neglect mind, if you were to act, think and speak with an evil mind through heedlessness, to arise the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Then suffering will follow you like the wheel that follow the hood of the car. So this first Dhammapada was already very clear. If you are not heedful to train your mind, to straighten your view, to avoid evil and do good, then you will fall. Means you become heedless, you don't care. You simply say things, you simply arise your thought, and you simply abuse people. So when you have this wrong thought, wrong speech and wrong action, full of the evil root or negativity of emotion and delusion, the Buddha said, you will fall. Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hood of the car. Then Dhammapada was two, the opposite, twin pair. The Buddha said, if you know the mind is a forerunner, all things mind is chief, everything arises when the mind arises, then you have to determine to take care of this mind. So when you take care of this mind, when you try to develop mindfulness and heedfulness, so that whatever action, speech and thought you arise them with mindfulness, heedfulness. So that if you act, speak and think with a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, where you are mindful, you are able to avoid all this, then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So to be happy is very easy. Train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, not to arise the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. To arise the pure thought, the wholesome thought, the good thought. That's why you must have Noble Eightfold Path. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and right effort. To continuously abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and later prevent them from arising. Then the right effort to continuously train yourself to arise the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. Then later on, the right effort to purify and perfect, to refine upon and perfect all this right thought, right speech and right action that you have starts to cultivate. Then you become different. Then you reap what you sow. Your life will change for the better. Then you will have more and more happiness because you are incapable of evil. Then you reap the good fruition of your right thought, right speech, right action, which is your good karma. Then all this wholesomeness, which is merits and virtue and blessing, will come back to you and support you. That's why you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So this particular analogy of the taxi driver, if you can link it to the Dhamma, you will know what you need to do. If you want to improve your life, you have to change yourself, straighten your view, develop your own virtue, kindness, goodness, then your life will change. Then you will see the true meaning of life. Then you will understand it's never worthwhile to violate all this, to do all these wrong things. Then you become incapable of doing all these things. You will never allow your own karmic nature to fall this way anymore. You will become very sincere, very truthful, very kind, very virtuous. You consider the feelings and safety of others. You put your own priority behind. You are willing to serve your customer because they are the one that bring forth the revenue, the income for you. So you have to treat them well. And your loved ones too. You have to treat them well, care for them, provide for them. Develop the understanding that you have a duty towards them. Your customer is the same, your loved one is the same, your friend, your colleague is the same. When you see the importance of doing your right duty or having the right responsibility towards them, This is the Dhamma. Because you reap what you sow. If you are kind, good and sincere towards them, means in future, if you plant the seed of wholesomeness like this, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. Means in future, you will have good taxi driver who will care for you. You will have good parents who will raise you up properly when you do your duty well. You will have good friends, good colleagues, good loved ones to care for you, to provide for you, to be responsible towards you. So this is what the teaching is all about. Do good begets good. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, goodness, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness and goodness. Likewise, if you plant the seed of evil or negativity, you will reap the fruits of evil and negativity. Then don't blame people for what happened to your life. So this is very, very important in cultivation. Okay? Hopefully you can relate, even though it's a mundane example, but it's a very, very good example, because if you understand the Buddha Dhamma, all Buddhists should have this awakening. Because the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching is so clear, you cannot afford to have any negativity, because this will become karma, karmic. And you are born of the air to the conditions or whatever, and you are what you are because of it. If you continue to live your life that way, with selfishness, with evil intention, with all the delusion, you will continue to reap the effect of all those karmic negativity. That's why understand this and determine to change yourself for the better, so that it will help you to understand life and bring about great improvement in your life. Then you will become successful in everything you do, because you have been very sincere, very honest, then very friendly, very kind, very gentle. Then everywhere you go, you will be blessed, because all this goodness and wholesomeness will be there for you. People will be friendly to you, kind to you. People are ever willing to help you. You will meet with taxi driver and all those people who are very kind towards you. Where you have that karmic inheritance, that vibration. Then when you are in trouble, if you help people before, certain life when you come, you are in such bad condition. Yet, your karma will take care of you. Good people who can help you will come to you. They will actually arise and help you overcome whatever problem. Where you have helped people before, you reap what you sow. This is what karma is all about. If you perform your duty well as parent, you will have good parents. If you do your duty and right responsibility towards your friends, your colleagues, in future you will have very good friends and very good colleagues who will be friendly and kind to you too and supportive of you. So this nature's law of karma, which is the first right view, is the most important. Okay? Then we go on a bit more. Oh, I have to stop already because 4:37 already. Okay, we will continue a bit more, then we will stop. Page 184. Confused people recite the Buddha's name and expect to be reborn in the Western paradise. This one we have gone through. Whereas the wise recite the Buddha's name in order to purify their mind. So this one you must have the understanding. Otherwise you chant without understanding. You cultivate without understanding. So when you meditate, it's the same. First thing is to purify your mind, means develop the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance. Then after that, with the spiritual faculty, you will understand spiritual teaching. Then your mind will be purified, because you will start to see many things. then you will start to straighten your view. So the pure mind is the Western paradise. If you understand that, then it is not 10 billion lengths away. It is right here within your own self nature. If you don't understand, you don't know how many Buddha lengths beyond, even the number. Even that number it is. Beyond even that number it is. It is said, confused. 1,000 books are few. Enlightened. One word is too much. Now you understand. When you don't have the understanding, give you 1,000 books also no use. But when you are very wise, one word is enough. When confused, you may study the sutta. Study that sutta. Investigate back and forth and still not understand. When truly awake, there is no need to study. One word is too much. But you must truly understand. Do not pretend and say, I don't have to recite the Buddha's name. That is just laziness. Once a man who was well read said to me, I have read many books, and now I find that they are all wrong. So I now no longer read books. He meant that he has realized Buddhahood and he is no longer needed. Sorry. And he no longer need anything. He is extremely stupid. Oh sorry, this is extremely stupid behavior. Understanding nothing, he faked understanding. You may try to brew tea in cold water, forcing it to steep, but you will never get tea. How can you brew tea in cold water? There are many strange people in the world, and uncountable numbers. So this one is just Shen Hua's way of explaining it. When you want to make tea, you need to have hot water. Otherwise, the tea will not be the tea. So it's just like people who don't really have that sincerity of cultivation, who didn't really do the cultivation, but they fake it in a sense. So just like that tea, if you don't have hot water, means you are not able to make the real tea. So if you don't diligently cultivate with the understanding and the faith, your cultivation will not give rise to any effect or become meaningful. It's just like the way you make your tea. Okay, we stop here. Then maybe we can have our meditation after this. So we are at page 185. It's better for you all to go back and read up a bit before you come, so that you, if you have any question or any doubt, you can ask. Otherwise, you come here, you every time listen, you don't really follow, no point. So prepare yourself a bit. Based on what you have gone through, you should be able to understand in quite detail. Then inquire. Whatever you don't understand, just inquire. Then from there, make full use of the session that we have to ask questions. If you are shy, you can write them down. Then put on the table here, then I can answer them. Okay, now meditation. For those who already know how to meditate, you can go ahead straight away. For those who are still new, maybe I will give you some instruction. Off the light. Off the light. According to the Buddha, the reason why people cannot meditate is because they have not trained their mind. They don't have the spiritual faculty to prepare themselves for meditation. So spiritual faculty like the word goes, there are special mind states that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching that will bring about the mind that is peaceful, quiet, aware. Because the spiritual faculty has this quality. First, they have faith. You will become very calm and very composed. Then they have this spiritual zeal, virya, to drive you to cultivate. That's why you will not be sleepy. Then they have sati, or mindfulness, that can make you silent, peaceful, and aware straight away. No need to think. The mind will be quiet, peaceful, straight away. Then they will have samadhi, the stability of it. Then because of the last spiritual faculty, wisdom, they will understand. Their mind will not simply stir, think, and react. Not like normal deluded people or unenlightened beings. That's why the people or cultivator who has spiritual faculty, they can meditate easily. And most living beings who has not trained their mind to develop the spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya, they have the opposite five. The Buddha called it the mental hindrance. These are the ones that will hinder you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, or inner peacefulness. So, if you have mental hindrance, you need to develop some skillful means to overcome them. Otherwise, they will hinder you and prevent you from becoming peaceful, and you cannot meditate. And the mental hindrance, you have to read it out if you are new. For those who are already here for a while, you will know. The five mental hindrances are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or lethargic mind, laziness of mind, then restlessness of mind. Your mind becomes restless because you have problem. You have fear, worry, anxiety, like health problem, financial problem, relationship problem, career problem, life-related problem, worry, anxiety, that makes you restless. Then the last one is doubt. So to overcome these five mental hindrances, which are very, very common in most people who have not trained their mind, I will teach you some skillful means. We call it the mind sweeping method or body scanning. Straight. First of all, you relax body and mind. Make sure you've got a straight back. Your backbone is straight. Relax. Then just silent everything. Body and mind completely relax, silent. Close your eyes. Then feel. Don't think, just feel. Feel your forehead. If you can detect any tension, any stress with it, then you just relax, relax, relax. Relax into every muscle within your forehead. Then you sweep the mind down to your eye muscle. Again, feel, then relax. If you can detect any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, again feel it soothingly, relax. Then facial muscle, again sweep it down, feel it. Each and every layer or strand of the facial muscle, feel it soothingly, relax, relax and relax. Then after that you continue to feel and relax. Then in order to assist you further to relax, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror radiating a radiant smile. When you can visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile, you have joy, you have happiness. A mind that is happy will relax on its own. All the facial muscles, they will relax. Then from there, you go back to your facial muscle and feel it soothingly relax. Then you can combine with metta or loving kindness. First, you radiate love or metta to yourself. You can follow what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel, as you recite, the well-being and happiness within yourself. When you recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, feel the body and mind, be well and happy, feel the well-being and happiness within your own body and mind, each and every cells within, feel it. This will bring about inner well-being, inner joy, inner happiness. So the mind sweeping method starts to make you quiet and peaceful, leading to inner peace. Then metta will lead to inner well-being, inner joy. Then you continue to radiate. May I, this body and mind of mine too, be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Then now you continue to radiate this love and metta to your loved ones. May all my loved ones too be well and happy, free from all form of suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they always keep themselves happy and peaceful. May they have good mind state. May they have more kindness, more goodness, and more sincerity, and more friendliness towards all beings. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the heart. Then you can continue to radiate this loving kindness to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, including all meditators, cultivators, including all beings within the whole of Patalingjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, and Mother Earth, then all beings within the entire solar system, our galaxy, then our Milky Way, then all beings throughout the entire existence, the whole of this universe, may they all to be well, happy and peaceful always. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you just relax yourself, body and mind completely. Then you maintain some form of attention at your facial muscle. Then continue to sweep it down. Feel your neck, relax. Just maintain awareness, relax. Then your shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder. Then you move your attention down to your heart or chest area. Feel. Just feel. This is the most important location within your body. This is where the heartbeat arises and passes away. This is where the seat of consciousness is. This is where your life force arises and passes away. So you just silence everything and just feel relaxed into it. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat. You just silence everything and just feel, be with it. If you are new, not sensitive, then it's okay. Just like you feel your forehead, you feel your chest area, you can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within. You just relax, relax and relax. Feel it soothingly. Relax. Then you move the attention down to your stomach. Feel, relax. Move it down further to your abdomen. Feel, relax. Then you move it to your leg. Feel, relax. Then your buttock. Feel, relax. Then you can reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method. Feel, relax, buttock. And move to your leg. Feel, relax. And your abdomen. Feel, relax. Then you move it up from your abdomen to your stomach. Again, feel, relax. Then your heart, your chest area, do the same. Feel, relax. Then you move it up to your shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, neck. Feel and relax them all. Then your facial muscle, feel, relax. Then your eye muscle, feel, relax. Then your forehead, do the same. By now, your calmness, your peacefulness should be more pronounced. You can have more peace within your mind state. Your mind will not think so much, you will not wander so much. But you need to maintain this peacefulness of mind, or this quietness of mind, calmness of mind, or awareness within. So I will teach you another skillful means to train this mind so that the inner peace, the inner mindfulness and awareness can be stabilized. If you don't have any object of meditation, then you can use anapanasati, or what they call mindfulness of in and out breath. So you maintain mindfulness of your breathing. So like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing in front of your nostril, just feel. Then like the Buddha say, breathing in, aware. Breathing out, aware. The breath and the mind move as one. That is mindfulness. So anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So anapana sati is just be mindful of this in and out breath. So you just maintain attentiveness in front of your nostril. Then train your mind. Every moment of awareness of the breathing, the mind and the breath move as one without thought. That is anapanasati. So you continue to train. If you are new, split second the thought will wander off. So sometimes you can't even maintain one or two breath. Then the anapanasati is gone. So it is okay, because if you are new, the untrained mind is still heedless, think a lot. So what you can do is be patient. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Maintain attentiveness. After a while, you will be able to develop the training. Then the mind which has developed, it will stabilize. Then this anapanasati, when it starts to function, it will become very quiet and very peaceful. Then the meditative mind that is doing anapanasati will develop the tranquility or stillness or quietness of mind. We call it piti. Piti is a type of spiritual peace or spiritual joy or spiritual calmness born of training the mind to be peaceful, to be in a state of awareness or mindfulness. So when you are mindful of the in and out breath without thought, your mind state will become very calm, very peaceful, and you will experience piti, spiritual calmness or spiritual bliss, spiritual joy, or spiritual rapture. Then you continue to relax into it, allow it to be. Then this particular piti will continue to transform until it become more and more refined. Then you will start to experience what they call sukha. Sukha is a spiritual blissfulness, a state of mind that is more tranquil, more peaceful than piti. Then when you experience sukha, you just relax and allow it to be. Then the anapanasati will become more and more refined, more and more, until it become very stable. Then all of a sudden your breathing all will become like very subtle or little or no breathing. Then you will start to experience that type of mind that is very quiet, very peaceful, very still, very tranquil, no movement at all. And this is what you have to do. That silent mind, that tranquil, still mind, is called pasati. That is the meditative mind. That is your silent mind that is capable of understanding and developing the meditation. So now I will let you continue on your own to train your mind. Then I will ring the bell after about 15 minutes. Okay. When those are still want to meditate, you can continue. For those that are not, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop so that you can carry this mind state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner mindfulness that you have developed into the daily life. The real meditation is mindfulness in daily life, the daily mindfulness. You can be mindful throughout the day in the midst of life, means you are heedful. Then only you are in the meditative state to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, or what they call sati sampajana. Four foundation of mindfulness is the only way to meditation, to develop wisdom, to develop self-understanding, to develop the penetrative insight, the characteristics of nature, to insight into phenomena, to realize the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self or empty nature. In Pali it's called anicchang dukkang anatta. Okay, now we will come to the second session of meditation where you can report your meditation and ask whatever question related to meditation and the teaching. Okay, we open up now. Anybody who wants to report meditation or ask question, you just raise your hand. Okay, while I do something to the recorder. The mic is here. Anybody? Ah, yeah. Pass to our sister there. Yeah.
Yes. Could you please explain neutral feeling in the context of Vedana Nupassana and Chitta Nupassana?
Vedana,
And Chitta Nupassana.
Chitta Nupassana. Oh, okay. So you can off the mic now. So the question is, our sister there requests me to explain what is the meaning of neutral feeling in Vedana Nupassana especially. But she also wants to know about Chitta Nupassana. So Chitta Nupassana is different. Chitta Nupassana is content of consciousness. Vedana Nupassana is mindfulness of the feeling, Vedana alone. And what the Buddha has taught in the Sutta is they always mention this feeling. There are three types. Whether it's pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling. So these are the feelings that will arise. So when we cultivate mindfulness of feeling, the second foundation. First foundation is mindfulness of kaya, kaya nupassana. I explained before, kaya is your physical body, whatever physical phenomena. No and pasana. No is like Buddha no sati, Dhamma no sati, means contemplation on the nine great virtues of the Buddha, contemplation on the Dhamma. Then the last one is Sangha Nusati, contemplation on the qualities of the Aryan Sangha or the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So nu is related to contemplate. Pasana is to insight into, like we pasana. We stand for the three characteristics of nature: impermanent, suffering, and non-self or empty nature. These three universal characteristics, you have to insight into them. Means each and every phenomenon within the phenomenal world, may be physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit these characteristics, which the Buddha called the universal characteristics of impermanence, leading to suffering, then empty nature or non-self nature, not a permanent and changing entity where you can cling on to, hold on to, and grasp on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So that explains to you the word pasana and nu. So when it comes to the four foundation of mindfulness, it's always kaya nu pasana, means mindfulness of kaya, means to develop the contemplative understanding and to insight into the characteristics of nature within your kaya. So similarly, vedana nu pasana. So you have to contemplate and insight into that feeling. So under the teaching, the Buddha said you start with kaya nu pasana, because you need to train your mind. So under kaya nu pasana, the first foundation of mindfulness, there are six categories of practices. The first practice, the Buddha said, you train yourself in anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, because the Buddha knew you don't have spiritual faculty, you don't have sati, so you need to train. So the first category of practice is just a guideline. The Buddha used anapanasati, or mindfulness of in and out breath, is because this is a very neutral object of meditation, suitable for most people, most personality. If your personality is not the unusual one, this breath is very neutral. It doesn't cause any problem. Like ask you to contemplate on death, or use the dead corpse as your object of meditation to develop the contemplative wisdom and to meditate on. You cannot. People with that type of fear character, they dare not do it. Then there are other type of object of meditation which may not be conducive to most people, because it is linked to either desire or fear. Whereas the breath is very neutral, you don't get disturbed or agitated by it, because the breathing is always with you if you want to maintain life. So this object of meditation is within you and very neutral, suitable for most personality. It's like the Buddha said, develop anapanasati, to train your mind so that it has mindfulness. You start out by anchoring it to the breathing, because our breathing is always within the moment. When you are mindful of this breathing, the in and out breath, you are with the moment without thought. Your mind cannot think because you are in sati. So kaya nupasana is to train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought, so that it is able to develop the mindfulness within. But to do that without the spiritual faculty is very difficult. So you anchor the mind to an object of meditation. In this case, it's your breathing. And because the breath is always in the moment, when you are mindful of it, you have this present moment awareness, or they call sati. Then the Buddha said, the moment you have trained this anapanasati, you have sati. Then from there, you have to come out of it into the daily life and cultivate the second category of practice. Mindfulness of the four posture. Is it standing? We have aware to develop awareness of the posture. Walking, you're also aware, means body and mind as one. When you stand, you're just attentive. Be aware of your posture. When you walk, body and mind as one. There is awareness of the four posture. Standing, then sitting, walking, and lying down. All these actions you have to do throughout the day. When you want to lie down, you have to be mindful. When you want to come out of it, you have to be mindful. When you are sitting, you have to be mindful. When you arise, standing, you have to be mindful. Then when you walk, you are mindful. When you can do that, then that stability of daily life mindfulness will start to develop. But then the connecting activity between these four postures, you must also develop them. So the next category of practice under Kaya Upasana, which is the third category of practice, is mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement within the present moment. Means all the connecting posture. You must develop mindfulness. Like the Buddha said, standing, aware, looking forward, aware, bending, stretching, turning, aware, putting on your clothing, yeah, the monk's robe or what, aware. Going for pindapat, aware. How you hold your bath and all those things, aware. Then when you answer nature's call, also aware. Then when you go about doing your daily activity and daily routine, you also maintain awareness. This is to anchor your mind to your bodily posture so that you don't think and you don't become heedless. As you are more and more mindful, your mind state will transform from a heedless way of living where you think a lot to a very mindful way of living, because you are most of the time aware of your posture, most of the time aware of your action and movement in your daily life. So when you are aware, you cannot think. You cannot think. And because you need to live life, you need to arise your thought in between. So most of the time you are aware, except when you need to use your thought, your mind, to attend to things. And then you can still do it mindfully. And that is what Kaya Upasana is all about. Then as you develop this mindfulness of the four postures followed by the daily mindfulness, your mind becomes very different. The spiritual faculty will stabilize. You will have faith leading to virya and sati. Then when you have sati, your mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, aware. Then as it stabilizes, you have samadhi. Samadhi means the mind that is peaceful, quiet and aware is collected, unwavering. Means at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, it doesn't waver. It is collected. That's why it has samadhi. That's why you are sitting as they are, it will not stir, it will not react. It will not, like, when you recall memory, this memory with its views, opinion and conditioning will not come and disturb you. You can sitting as they are. Then you know this movement because you are aware. Then you understand, if I use this, then I'm acting according to memory. And this is all my fear, my memory of the past. My fear, my worry, my anxiety, my lack of peace, my insecurity, my selfishness, my craving, my views and my opinion of what things is, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So all this you will start to see them. That's how this daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, will lead you to have this understanding. Then you will know how you become angry, how you become fearful, how you become emotional, then how the evil roots comes to be, how you become reactive to sense experience, your like and dislike and all those things. And because these are mental hindrance, sensual desire and ill will, which is your like and dislike, your pleasant and your unpleasant sense experience. So this is how you actually straighten your view, where you see them. Then you know these are mental hindrance, sensual desire and ill will. If throughout the day, when you are living your daily life, if you continue to react to sense experience in this way, whatever you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile feel or think, you stir your mind, you react. There is like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Means you are creating mental hindrance. The first two mental hindrance, which are sensual desire and ill. So if these mental hindrance are there throughout the day, whenever you encounter something through your sense experience, then what happens is this becomes habitual tendency. Habitual tendency means it becomes a habit. Every time you see, you react, stir your mind. Every time you hear, you do the same. Every time you think or you recollect something, you again react. So what happens is when this mental hindrance become habitual, becomes so active, throughout the day you have this mental hindrance that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. That's how you have problem. This mental hindrance will make you heedless because it will prevent you from becoming peaceful, entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner mindfulness. So this is how you become aware. Then you realize this is heedless living, leading to all the hindrance, make you heedless. Then when you are heedless, you have a lot of delusion, a lot of wrong view. The evil roots of greed and hatred, they keep on arising because of your wrong view. You keep on stirring your mind. And this is heedless living. And the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. So spiritually you are as if dead. So without mindfulness, without heedfulness, you cannot cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. You don't stand a chance to become enlightened. That's why this Sati Sampajana is very important. It will transform you from heedless to a heedful way of living. And this will arise because of the spiritual faculties. Because as you are mindful, you develop the understanding. Then your mindfulness stabilizes, you develop the wisdom, you straighten your view, you got less wrong view. Then in the future, you will not react and stir your mind like before. That's why you become more and more peaceful, more and more calm, more and more quiet, less and less hindrance, less and less reactive. So your ignorance, that conditioned mental activity, the like and dislike, become less. So as you straighten your view, you got less wrong view, less avijja, you got less thinking, less sankara. That's how your mind become more quiet. Then after that, you will continue to train this mind until you are most of the day, throughout the day, aware, mindful, without thought. You hardly think. That is the meditation. So when you reach that state, the initial wisdom will come. You will start to understand that all these are dependent originating, not real, impermanent, leading to suffering. Then they are empty, not what you think. And this understanding will come. That's why the initial wisdom will come. But you have not realized cessation of form and mind, enlightenment, nirvana. That's why initially is the initial wisdom. The Buddha said after you have cultivated the four posture, the daily mindfulness or sati sampajana, mindfulness with clear comprehension, then only you can go into the cultivation of mindfulness of the four elements. Means contemplation on the four elements within your own body and mind. The physical body has its four elements. External physical thing has its four elements. So they have the earth element, part of it. Then water element, apo. Then you got the heat element, tejo. Then you got the wind element, vajo. So part of it, apo, tejo and vajo, these are the four elements. And they have the characteristics of like pottery is called the earth element solidity. Solid thing, we classify them as pottery, like our bone structure, our skull. The solid part, we call it pottery, the earth element. Then the wind element are those that trigger of our movement, our habits, sorry, our heartbeat, the pulsation, the vibration, the pulse of life, whatever vibration within you that enable you to have the posture, because the blood, as they send it through, they have this what they call wind element that creates support for you and your bone structure together. Then your breathing, your vibration, all these are the wind element. Then you have the heat element, that's why it maintains the temperature within so that your organ function optimally. Then you have also what they call the water element, your blood, your sweat, your urine, whatever mucus, pulse, everything. These are the liquid element or water element. So this physical body without consciousness is just element, can never be you. Go the way of nature. That's why it will get old, get sick and die one day, because it's just element. So it's for you to reflect and contemplate on the physical body. They are made of elements. That's why they are not real, the non-self nature. Then after that, the Buddha said, you must move on to the next category of practice, the fifth one. He said, you must contemplate on this body as the 32 parts that come together and perform the function. That's why you call it the human being, the human body. Like a car, all the parts, you assemble them together. The block cart is the same. During the time of the Buddha, he asked the monk to put the wheel together, the axle, the cart, then the one that the horse drawn or the cow they draw. So all these are the component, the condition for its arising. So the 32 part is the same. It's for you to understand that without the parts, the so-called human being or human form does not arise. So like the block cut, when all the parts come together and it perform a function, they give it a name. That's why block cut arise, exists already, because it perform a function and you give it a name. So similarly, the car is the same, your physical body is the same. But how come you cannot see? When the Buddha asked them to dismantle all the wheel, the axis of the block cart, then they asked the monk, where is the block cart? They said, no more, because the part has been taken down. Means this is condition arising. When the parts come together, when the condition come together, then it fulfill a function, perform a function, you give it a name, then it arises, it becomes like real, exists. This physical body is the same, karmically conditioned. When the parts come together, when you are born as a fetus, this slowly division of the cell create the senses, then the consciousness come in, then the so-called embryo is developed. That's how life form comes about. Then it's born into the world, you call it a baby, a child. Then it grew up into a boy or a girl, then become adult, then later get old, get sick and die. And this is just a phenomenal condition arising entity, no reality. Like the block up, when the condition come together, perform a function, you give it a name, it arise, exists. But it is not real, because it is condition arising, dependent originating, no reality. When the condition cease to be, supporting condition that support the existence of this cease to be, it will cease to be. That's why it has the characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering. You attach and cling, you suffer. So this is to allow you to see clearly that the physical body is not you. It's condition arising, also phenomenon. Then those who have lust, who get themselves entangled with the physical body, the physical form, especially when this physical form, like flower, when it is very beautiful at the right age and all those things. So a lot of people get attracted to the form because of the beauty that it can manifest. Then nowadays, our human civilization has become more sophisticated, more advanced, especially the fashion world and the what they call things that are related to beautifying the physical body. You have not only fashion, you have your perfume, your facial product and other things that can make your skin look younger, look more pretty. They even have plastic surgery and all those things. So these are the things that can actually bring about delusion for living being to be attracted by the physical form. Then with the multimedia, you got a lot of video inside there. They even have a lot of pornography and all things that can stimulate your lust, your craving, your desire for the form. So the Buddha say, in order to keep you away from this lust, this craving and this delusion, he introduced the last category of practice under Kayanupassana. He said, you have to finally contemplate on the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition of this physical form, so that you are not deceived by it. So the last category of practice is very simple, the Buddha said. You look at this physical body when it's devoid of consciousness. When this consciousness come out, then it become like a dead corpse. Then you look at it. You see how it transform, how the 4 elements return to nature, how from a beautiful form it becomes so ugly, so foul, so filthy, so what they call unsightly, until you fear it. This dead body, when it's without consciousness, it goes the way of nature. You know, the first thing that happens is the wind element is gone. The body becomes cold, no more vibration. Wind element followed by heat element. That's why the body becomes cold. A dead corpse is very cold. Then when the earth element deteriorates, the water element ooze out. Then you got a foul smell because it starts to decay. Then the physical form become like very ugly, very filthy, unsightly. Then after that, he said, you continue to look at it, contemplate. Then this one start to dry up. Then sometimes if they are in the China ground, the birds will come and tear it apart. The crow, the type of dog you call a jackal or don't know what, they will come and tear them apart and eat them. Then finally only the bone, then it start to dry up. Then over a long period of time, the bone also deteriorate, decay. Then it become like powder, ashes. Then whatever that is born of ash will return to nature. That's why in the Christian there is a saying, whatever that is born of flesh is flesh, whatever that is born of spirit is spirit. So flesh body is the physical, not the real body. So under this meditation, when you start to see this, then you realize the delusion of the mind. You are attracted to the beautiful form because you cannot see the dependent originating, the condition arising entity. It animate until it's so real. Then they go and put the makeup and all these things that help to enhance its beauty, the perfume and all those things, the dressing, the fashion. Then they can talk, they can smile, they can lure you, deceive you. So all this will lead to desire, craving, lust and all those things. That's why you have a lot of this crime-related activity, rape, kidnapping and other things, or sexual harassment, abuse and other things. So all these are the related crime or wrong action of the human mind that has this evil roots and delusion, that has this craving, this lustful craving or lustful thought. So in order to bring about right understanding, you're supposed to reflect and contemplate. If it goes the way of nature, finally become like that, then why are you so deluded, so deceived by it? So when you contemplate, you straight away you know this is condition arising without the consciousness. It goes the way of nature. That's why during the Buddha's time, there was a queen who was very pretty. Then when the queen was far away listening to the Buddha, the Buddha knew she got the potential to become enlightened, because the thing that holds back the queen's ability to become enlightened is she was so pretty, and she thought she is the most pretty in the country. That's why she is very proud of her own beauty. She attached to her own beauty. She got no time for Dhamma or understanding herself. Then all of a sudden the Buddha manifests through his psychic a young and more pretty lady serving the Buddha, like fanning the Buddha. Then the queen got like very excited. How come there is somebody who is more pretty than her? Then as she was absorbed in that vision, the Buddha suddenly create through her special ability or special psychic ability the deterioration or the decay process of that young lady serving him. All of a sudden she starts to see the transformation, how she grew old and become so ugly and all. Then all of a sudden the queen realized her own form, her own beauty is the same. One day she is going to end up like this. Then through that, all of a sudden, the understanding, she connect back to her past cultivation. Straight away, she became an anagami, third stage of sainthood. So when you reflect, contemplate, and when you have this type of past cultivation, you can awaken. So that's why the first category of practice is Kayanupassana, the sixth type of practices. And then we come on to Vedana, which is the question that she asked. The Buddha said, when you are mindful of feeling, you must have mindfulness first. Without mindfulness, you cannot. Yet to be mindful of feeling, you must have the ability to be aware, silent, without movement of thought. Then when you are aware, because you are so conditioned in the conditioned world, when you are in your daily activity or mindfulness, if you have this mindfulness very stable, then only you can be at the moment of feeling. Then you will start to see at the moment of consciousness there is feeling within every consciousness that arises, whether seeing, hearing, taste, smell, tactile or thought. And this feeling is an aggregate of mind. Then because of your views and your opinion, at the moment of sense experience, because you associate with the sense experience, like seeing, you think there is a person who sees. Then your memory, which is a conditioning, your like and dislike, will condition you to react. Then you will have pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So what is pleasant and unpleasant sense experience? It's very important. I write it on the board. This one I can rub off. I think this one is in the facts, so I can rub off. When you chant without understanding, there is delusion, deluded. The wise one, they develop the Pure Land chanting, they understand, is to purify the mind. That is cultivating the spiritual faculty. Okay. So now, when it comes to Vedana, Upasana, Vedana is feeling, No, Upasana. Second foundation of mindfulness. When you have the first foundation, means your stability of mindfulness is already there. That in the midst of life, at the moment of sense experience, you can be mindful. And you realize that each and every moment of sense experience, whether it's seeing consciousness, hearing, smell, taste, or tactile consciousness, or thought consciousness, there is this feeling within. Feeling. That is the aggregate of feeling we call Vedana. So the Buddha said, when you are mindful, you will be able to be mindful of this feeling. And this feeling can come in many forms. So there are three types of feeling, the Buddha said, three types. So first type is, what is the first feeling? Huh? What is it? Pleasant feeling. Huh? Pleasant feeling means what? The feeling that you like, right or not? Huh? Pleasant feeling. And what is this? Huh? What is this? Feeling that you like. That you desire. Ah, this is essential desire. So this is a mental hindrance. Desire. Then the second one is what? Huh? Second one is unpleasant. Unpleasant is what? Feeling that you don't like. What is that? Huh? Ah, ill will. Another mental hindrance. So this is ill will. Feeling that you don't like. So these two, they are the first and second mental hindrance. These are the first and second mental hindrance. So what is Vedana? Nupasana is to enable you to be mindful of your feeling when it arises. Every moment of sense experience, this feeling is there. Then when feeling has become craving, what is craving? Positive and negative desire. Your craving is attachment, clinging, desire. It can be positive or negative. That's why dependent origination, you already study. Upon contact, feeling arise. Then feeling will be conditioned into craving. Why? Because of avijja, wrong view. At the moment of sense experience, you don't have yoniso manasikara, which is wisdom at the moment of sense experience, the craving will arise. And craving is the cause of suffering. That's why craving has positive and negative. And this tally with the mental hindrance, with the three evil roots of greed and hatred. The first two are the three evil roots. That's why not only mental hindrance, they are also the first and second evil roots of greed and hatred. So what the Buddha wants you to develop is, when feeling arises, you must be aware. Then when feeling has become craving, you must be aware whether this feeling is pleasant or unpleasant feeling. You must be aware. Aware means what? You have this mindfulness to be aware. Aware that you have delusion, you have wrong view. That's why your mind stir and react and has trigger of sensual desire or ill will craving. And these are evil root of all evil, make you evil, make you unhappy or desire for that state. So this Vedana Nupassana is to tell you that your feeling has transformed into mental hindrance and evil roots. That's why when you are aware, what must you do? If you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, what must you do? You must arise the four right efforts. And the first right effort is what? Right effort to abandon the craving, positive or negative, the unwholesome thought that has arisen. Did you do that? This is what the four foundation of mindfulness is all about. This is what cultivation is all about. But you all become gullible. Oh, Vedana Nupassana, I'm doing Vedana. The book say, the monk say, oh, feeling has become pleasant and unpleasant, or neutral feeling. You just follow the book and don't understand what it is. Then just say, yeah, I aware, pleasant feeling, unpleasant. But you don't know these are hindrance, these are evil roots. And the next step is the four right effort. You never practice, you never cultivate, you never put it into practice in real life. If you don't do that, you cannot purify your thought. Then how to root it out? Root it out, you must maintain mindfulness. You must go through the Buddha's teaching, five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. What are the five ways? The first one is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. That's why you cultivate right effort to cultivate the direct opposite wholesome thought that are still not in you. You understand? Like you saw yourself got craving, got desire. You have not cultivated contentment, which is the direct opposite wholesome thought, so that you are not lustful. Then when you see yourself having this anger, hatred, you must cultivate metta, loving kind. And this one, you must arise the right effort to cultivate them. Then later on, refine upon them and perfect them. And all this four right effort, people hardly practice. That's why you are not cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. You are not serious about the practice. You don't understand what is meditation. You only go by the book and the word. You think this is Vedana Nupassana. Oh. When feeling arise, feeling has become pleasant or unpleasant feeling, you just note feeling. That I got anger, I got what? Then you try to control, suppress anger and fight the anger. The Buddha never say that. The Buddha say, the moment feeling arise, you must be aware. That feeling has become pleasant or unpleasant feeling, you must also become aware. Aware means what? Your mind has stirred due to wrong view. It has reacted, and the hindrance is there to make me heedless, to develop the habitual tendency, so that the hindrance is constantly prevailing, becoming more and more intense. And you cannot see this and abandon all this and reverse all this through the four right effort, because after you have the ability to be to abandon, then you will have the mindfulness to see it. So the next time when you see it coming, you will have the right effort to prevent it from arising. There's no more meaning. It is leading you to the hindrance and the evil root and make you evil and make you fall karmically. That's why you arise the right effort, efforts to abandon them, then later on to prevent them from arising. Means you know this is not the way. You would determine to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. So you have to prevent it from arising. Otherwise it will condition you into karmic negativity. Then in order to overcome the five ways, the first way is to contemplate on the direct opposite wholesome thought and arise the right effort to cultivate this direct opposite wholesome thought that is still not in you. And you never do that. Understand? Then after that, what do you do? If that one still doesn't work for you, means you don't really understand why you need to cultivate the direct opposite wholesome thought. Then you have to think of the consequence of allowing this thought to arise. If you don't abandon it, don't prevent it from arising, and you continue to allow it to arise, then the consequence of it is what? These are mental hindrance. I will forever become heedless. I will never become mindful or heedful. And these are evil roots of greed and hatred. It will make me evil, and I will fall karmically. So when you reflect and contemplate on the consequence, like the evil root of hatred, is one of the three poison. Evil poison, you kill you spiritually. How can you allow it to be there? That's why you were determined to abandon it and prevent it from arising. Then these are non-meditative. These are just at the thought level, contemplative level. Then the meditative level is, the Buddha said, you have to understand it. You have to be with it, aware, maintain mindfulness. That's how citta nupassana come in, the third category of practice. You have to be mindful of the content of consciousness. Then when you meditate, means you silence your mind and just be with it. Just aware. Don't try to do anything. Don't try to know. Silent. The very moment you are able to be silent without any movement, the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. Then you realize that movement, which is craving, pleasant or unpleasant feeling, or even fear, which is delusion, if you stay there, just maintain awareness, silence your mind and just aware. All this conditioned arising state, the sensual desire, the ill will, the greed, the hatred and the fear, before they arise, they were not there. But because of condition, your wrong view is still, it conditioned it to arise. And when you understand that this is a conditioned arising state, then you will come to know anger is not me, fear is not me, sensual desire, ill will is not me. So why can't I find out in the meditation whether this is true or not? I don't have to believe what the Buddha said. Then you relax, aware, silent, like I teach you in the meditation. The real meditation is not to do anything. Just relax, silent and aware that this is your natural state of mind before the stirring, before the reaction. It's already peaceful if you don't have wrong view, if you don't react and don't stir. So if you silent, aware and be with that state, which can be either sensual desire, ill will or what they call fear, then you see what happened. Even anger, it will slowly dissipate. Then you realize when you don't think, when you don't give it any more meaning, when you don't allow your views and opinion to interfere with your consciousness, then your content of consciousness become pure. Then you realize the true mind, which is the silent mind, peaceful mind, awareness, come back. They come back because the hindrance is no more. Because you don't react to it. You don't cling onto it, you don't hold onto it, you don't fight it, you don't suppress it. You understand? That is the real meditation. Just relax into it. Be with it and find out. Then you realize they are conditioned arising, not real. When conditions cease to be without wrong view, they cease. So this is what Vedana Nupassana and Citta Nupassana is all about. But the problem with the living being is they cannot. Because the moment they become aware of feeling, they allow it to flow without understanding this teaching. Then they thought it's normal. Then they try to fight it. They try to prevent the anger. You say, I don't want to get angry the next time. That's why they try to suppress control. Yeah. No, I'm not angry. He's like that one. From the tone you say, you already know you still have anger. Because you have not rooted it out. You have not understood. And you don't know the practice. That's why you have to silence. And silencing is just the third way. You have not developed the wisdom. So what happens is, every time you got problem, you got anger, sensual desire, you go and silence yourself. You go and meditate. It's like those who go to retreat, no use. After that, come out again, face the same thing, again, got anger, got fear. So the Buddha said, move on to the fourth way. Fourth way means what? To trace the origination factor. Before I get angry, There was no anger. Then how the anger arise? It's through one of the sense or consciousness. Either through what I see, what I hear, or what I think. Then it arise. This is how you trace. Then you trace, and you come to this understanding that because of wrong view, you continue to react and stir. Then how can you develop the wisdom to retrospectively reverse all this? It's like the Buddha said, you must straighten your view. When you know that you have wrong view, you have duality, you have attachment to pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. That's why you cannot end it. So you have to learn to develop the wisdom, like what the Buddha said, to see things as they are. Thing is just the way it is. No right, no wrong. No good, no bad. Means what? Means you have the understanding to accept the reality of what is happening. This is the reality. Right and wrong, good and bad is relative. Different people have different views and opinions of those reality. So if you don't cling and don't attach and allow it to be, then you understand. People are just the way they are. No right, no wrong. Means? Again, not recorded. Not all the batteries, no more. You could change the battery or not? Never mind. We see how it goes. Because there is a spare one, I think. Jinhao brought, luckily. So you see, when you understand this, then you need to straighten your view. If I learn to accept them for what they are, if I don't discriminate that as right or wrong, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, what happened? What happened? My mind will be at peace, isn't it? I can accept the reality. They are just the way they are. Isn't it? Angry people say angry things. Deluded people do deluded things. Then when I can accept them for what they are, I don't have to react and stir. Then I'm at peace. Then I realize the next time I see them, when I have enough of this understanding, when I straighten my view and accept them for what they are, then I'm at peace. Then I will arise the loving kindness and the compassion, and I will pity them. Like what Jesus said, for they know not what they do. That's why they continue to do. Through ignorance, they do. Through their own delusion, they do. That's why deluded people do deluded things. Angry people do angry things. So when you have this, you become beautiful. This is how you develop equanimity of mind. You do not stir anymore. Then through this understanding, you retrospectively reverse it, develop the wisdom. Then one day, when your daily mindfulness becomes so stable, your wisdom becomes so stable after you have straightened your view, your mind will start to become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful. Then all of a sudden, it will enter into cessation, stillness, and you will realize Nibbana and become enlightened. That's how the meditation is to be developed. Then coming back to her question, she wants to know about neutral feeling. See, neutral feeling under the text, they say feeling got three, either pleasant or unpleasant, which is the two extreme, duality. Then there is a neutral feeling. Neutral feeling got two types. One is indifferent. When it doesn't affect you, this type of feeling is called neutral feeling also. But it doesn't affect you, understand or not? Like your neighbor's car, new car, got accident, you can laugh and come back and tell your spouse, yeah, neighbor's sway, the car just bought only, you got accident. Why? You know, you have neutral feeling, that car don't belong to you, understand? That's why you can make a joke out of it. So this is indifferent, nothing to do with you, like not your children, got drug problem or police case or what? The neighbor sweet or that person really bad karma. Because to you, it doesn't affect you because you don't have any relationship. That's why this is called indifferent. Not related to me, I don't have any problem. Understand not? This type of neutral feeling is born of delusion because it is still dependent on condition. Because it does not have anything to do with you, that's why you are not affected. then you have this ability to maintain like normal neutral feeling. But the other type of neutral feeling born of wisdom is different. That's why the Buddha said when you are mindful Vedana Nupassana, when you are doing it, you must be aware what type of neutral feeling is it. If the neutral feeling is indifferent, it's born of delusion. What happens if that thing affects your loved one? Can you stay the way you are? So that type of neutral feeling is not born of wisdom. The one that is born of wisdom, no matter what happens, even to yourself, your loved one, and things that are very dear to you, you can still maintain that neutral feeling. That's why feeling will remain as pure feeling, because there is wisdom. It will not transgress into the other two types of pleasant or unpleasant feeling. And it is born of wisdom. That is what upekkha is all about. Equanimity of mind, born of wisdom. Not deluded by relationship, by the, what they call, defilement that is within. Okay? So this is what you need to understand. Okay, sorry for exceeding the time. I think 10 minutes past 6. We have to end. Okay, we should thank our sister for the good question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit, transfer of merit. Then you make your aspiration. Then we end. Sharing of merit with the devas. Akasata ca bumatha devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tu loka sasana itta watta camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nirvana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.
Right.